Masechet Baba Mesi'ah Daf Mem Gimel. We are almost finished the third perek. Mishnah Hamafkid Ma'ot Esel Shulchani Im Sirurin Lo Yishtamesh Behen Lefichach Im Avdu Enochaya Bacharyutan Mutarin Yishtamesh Behen Lefichach Im Avdu Chaya Bacharyutan. If someone gives money to a money changer, money changers didn't only change money. Sometimes they were like banks, and they would hold on to your money for safekeeping. So, if the money is bound up in a cloth, then the money changer may not use it. He's supposed to put it in a safe deposit box, keep it as is, and return it as is when the customer wants it. Therefore, if it gets lost, the money changer is not responsible. He is like a shomer chinam. And so since he's not getting any benefit from it, he's not getting any usage out of it. If he has to watch it, you know, in a proper way, he can't be negligent. But as long as he's not negligent, and if it gets lost, the money changer is not responsible. However, if the customer gives him loose change, that's the difference between mutarin and asurin or sirurin. Sirurin means bound up. Mutarim, the same word as permitted, but really permitted means unbound. Right? There's no restrictions. So if he gives him loose chains, unbounded money, then the money changer is allowed to use it. He can use it to change other people's money, like a bank today. You give them $1,000 to hold for you. They're not holding that $1,000. They're using it. They're lending it out. They're making change with it. And then when you come back and ask for your money, they give you different money. So since the money changer can use it, so he's getting benefit from it. As the Gemara will explain, now he's you could be like a shomer, a sachar, or it could be like a shoel. He could be like a paid watchman or like a borrower. So in any case, he is using it. And therefore, if it gets lost, the shomer is responsible to replace it, just as a shomer sachar is responsible and a shoel, a borrower, also is responsible for replacing it if it should get lost. Esel ba'ala bayit ben surin ben mutarin lo yishtamesh behen lefichach im avdu enochei abachariutan chen vani ke ba'ala bayit ben Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda omer chen vani ke shulchani. If you give something to a householder, just a regular layperson, say, can you hold on to this money for me, then it doesn't matter whether they are bound or unbound, whether it's bound up in a cloth or loose change, the homeowner cannot use it. He's not a bank. If I'm asking you to watch this money for me, this is not a loan that you can go and use. I'm expecting you to put this exact money in a drawer somewhere safe, in your wall, in the ground, and then I'm going to come back for this exact money. You're not allowed to use it. Therefore, if it gets lost, then you are not responsible. That's simply a shomer chinam. So it's interesting. It's the same scenario, yet two different laws depending on the profession or non-profession of the person who is watching it. Now, there's someone in between, which is a storekeeper. A storekeeper, on the one hand, he's not in finance. He's just selling things. On the other hand, because the storekeepers often were taking in a lot of money, sometimes people would ask them for a loan, right? Can I take this flour? I'll pay you later. Or they would give them a deposit and say, can you hold on to this money? So sometimes storekeepers acted somewhat like banks, but not totally, not as much as a money changer. And therefore, there's a machloket whether a storekeeper is like a homeowner, that's according to the Bimeir, and therefore he should not use the money that's given to him if it's deposited with him for safekeeping. And so if he does use it, if it gets lost, then he is responsible. Rabbi Yehuda, however, he is not responsible if it gets lost because he's not allowed to use it. Rabbi Yehuda, however, says that a storekeeper is more like a money changer. He does. He keeps people's money and then he'll use it. He'll make change with it. He might lend people money with it. And since he's using it, he's more like a borrower and the same as a money changer is. And therefore, if it gets lost, he is responsible to replace it. Good. Mishum desurin lo yishtamesh bahen. Now we ask, just because it's bound up, does that mean the money changer really can't use it? No, it means not only is it bound up, but it was also stamped. In other words, just because it's bound up, so it's in a cloth, that's the way people normally carry money. It's just easier to bind it up than to have loose change that falls all over the place. So just because it's bound up doesn't mean that you can't use it, and that the depositor does not want the money changer to use it. Rather, only if it's bound up and also sealed. He put a stamp on it. So that means don't open it, right? This is mine. I don't want you to open it. Then the money changer, if he loses it, is not responsible. Rav Mari amar bekesher mishuneh, or another answer. Rav Mari says it's an unusual knot. If he uses just a usual knot, then the cloth is just simply out of convenience. But he's just giving him the money and said, you know, just give me back equivalent money later on, but you can use it in the meantime. But if it's an unusual knot, that knot is kind of like a signature in itself. It's kind of like a stamp. There's another version, however, where Rav Mari didn't say it as a statement, as a halakha, but rather as a question. If it has an unusual knot, is that considered just bound up but for convenience, or is that considered like a signature? And so he asked the question and left it unresolved. Now, mutarin yishtamesh bahen. The money changer, if he gets loose change, or we just said, if it's just bound up in a regular way, then he can use it, and therefore he is responsible. Amar Rav Huna, v'afilu ne'ensu. Rav Huna says, not only if it just gets lost, even if it's beyond his control, something happens to it, right? There's like a disaster, and that's beyond his control, and he can't return it for that reason. Also, the money changer is responsible. So now we ask about the v'ha'abdu katane, but the Mishnah says Mishnah says the word if it got lost. That suggests that the money changer is only responsible if it gets lost. But if it's beyond his control, then he would not be responsible, right? Because it only says avdu. If the Mishnah meant nansu, it should have said that. So this is a challenge to Rav Huna. We answer kidrabat amarabat nignebu belistim mizuyan avdu shetaba'as ifinato bayam. Rabbah says that, in fact, is what the Mishnah meant. When the Mishnah says lost, it doesn't mean just a regular case of lost, like, I don't know, got lost, you know, I don't know what happened to it, but rather that it was lost or stolen usually go together. So not a regular case of loss or a regular thief that just, you know, comes and breaks in the middle of the night and robs the person, but rather it was stolen with an armed bandit where the guy, even he's there, he can't do anything about it. That's honest. Or it was lost means that it was on a ship and the ship sunk at sea. So it would be totally beyond control. There's nothing you possibly could have done to prevent it or to stop it. That's really what the Mishnah means when it says avdu. It means lost, including stolen, in a way that is beyond his control. And so, in fact, the Mishnah is saying that if the money lender gets loose money, which he's permitted to use, then he is responsible not only in a regular case of loss and getting stolen, but he's also responsible even if it's honest, a case beyond his control. That was the opinion of Rav Huna. But Rav Nachman amar nensu lo. Rav Nachman disagrees and says that a money changer is only responsible if it gets lost and stolen, but not if it's honest. That would be the same as the law of a shomer sachar. Amar le Rava le Rav Nachman li dinach de amat nensu lo alma lo have shoel alayhu. So Rava asked Rav Nachman, according to you who says that a money changer who gets loose change to watch for someone else is not responsible and honest, so that means it's not a shoel. A shoel borrower is responsible not only for getting lost and stolen, but even for honest. But you're saying he's not responsible for honest, so he's not like a shoel. So is shoel lahave shomer sachar nami lahave. So now he's not a shoel, but he's also not a shomer sachar because the money changer isn't getting paid to watch it. It's not like I'm giving you here's a $10,000. And for your trouble of watching it, here's another $100, right, that you can watch it. Kind of like if you pay for a locker, or if you pay for a safe deposit box, right? So you're paying for you'd be paying to for someone to watch it for you. That would be Shomer Sachar. But in this case, the money changer is not getting paid to watch it. So either if he's not using it, he's a Shomer Chinam. If he is using it, he should be like a Shoel, right? He's like borrowing money and making use of the money. But according to your verdict, that he's responsible for loss, but not responsible for ones, then you're saying that he's like a Shomer Sachar. But how could he be like a Shomer Sachar if he's not getting paid? Rav Nachman's answer is, in fact, I agree with you, and I think he is a Shomer Sachar. I agree with your analysis. Because he is benefiting from it. And that very benefit that will come to him if he makes a good purchase, right? You gave me this $10,000 to hold for you, and I'm allowed to, it's loose. It's not bound up, so I'm allowed to use it. If a good deal comes along, I can take your $10,000 and use it for myself. I can basically borrow it and make a profit, and that itself is a benefit. Like banks today, they don't charge you anything for a checking account because they make money just holding the money for you, and they can lend it out and invest it themselves. And as long as they make it available to you when you want it, back. So because of that benefit, that is in fact a Shomer Sachar. Good. Itibe Rav Nachman l'Rav Huna. Now Rav Nachman, who says that a money changer is not responsible for ones, is going to challenge Rav Huna, who says a money changer is responsible for ones, from the following Mishnah, Masechet Me'ilah. Hamafkid ma'ot esel shulhani. Here we're talking about a temple treasurer. He's holding on to temple money. If someone uses temple money for their own purposes, then they are liable to me'ila. Okay, so temple treasurer, he gives some money to a money changer to hang on for him for safekeeping. Im sirurin lo yishtamesh bahen. Lefi chach im osi lo ma'al hagizbar. Vim mutarin yishtamesh bahen. Lefi chach im osi ma'al hagizbar. If the money is bound up, then the money changer is not allowed to use it. That's the Mishnah that we already learned. Therefore, if the money changer does go against the previous Mishnah, our Mishnah, here in Masechet Baba Metziah, and he spends that money, then who is responsible? Who violates Me'ilah? Not the temple treasurer. See, the temple treasurer, he acted responsibly. He's a temple treasurer, but he has this money, and I don't know, he's going somewhere dangerous, so he's going to give it to the money changer. Hold on to this for me. Okay, good. So that's he's allowed to do that, and since it's bound up, the money changer is not supposed to use it. So if the money changer then violates stealing number one and uses it, he might not know that this is temple money. But anyway, he's not allowed to use it, even if it's a regular person's. So if he goes ahead and spends that money, so he violates Me'ilah. Me'ilah is a special law. You violate Me'ilah even unknowingly. Okay, so because he wasn't supposed to use it and he used it, the money changer is the one that violated, not the temple treasurer. He's okay. On the other hand, if the money is unbound, then since the money changer is permitted to use unbounded money that belongs to other people, as per our Mishnah, so if he goes ahead and spends the money, uses it, gives it as a loan, buys something with it, then it's the temple treasurer who is responsible, because the temple treasurer, he's the one that misused the money by giving it to a money changer unbound, right? With that expectation that the money changer can then use it. So since he gave it to him basically with permission, here, take this money, go ahead, you can spend it. So that the temple treasurer is the one that acted irresponsibly, and if the money changer ends up spending it, it's the temple treasurer who is liable for Me'ilah. Okay, that's the Mishnah. Now here's the question. According to you, Rav Huna, you say that the money changer is liable even if it's under circumstances beyond his control. So that means you're considering this like a shoel. You consider money changer like a shoel. So you're considering this like a loan, right? A shoel, a loan is similar, the same as a shoel. You're taking this thing and using it, and you're not paying for the right to use it. In the case of a loan, you wouldn't be allowed to, because then that would be charging interest. So since you're treating him like a shoel, and that would be the same as a loan, so now that means when the temple treasurer gives the money to the a money changer, he's giving him a loan. The temple treasurer is already giving him a loan, so that means the temple treasurer violates me'ilah the second he gives the money to the money changer, even before the money changer does anything with it. He already violates. So therefore, why does the Mishnah say im hotzi? If the money changer spends the money, then, and sounds like only then, the temple treasurer is liable. But if he didn't spend the money, he just held it there, then the temple treasurer will not be liable. Why should that be so? Even if he didn't spend it, just giving the money. See, Rav Nachman saying, according to me, I say this is a shomer sachar. So if the temple treasurer gives money as shomer sachar to the guy, then that's to the money changer, that's fine. You didn't do anything wrong. The problem is that he gave it to him unbound, and that gives him permission to use it. Once he uses it, then this money has been misappropriated. Who is responsible? Not the money changer, because it was unbound. So he had no reason not to think that he can't use it. And it's the temple treasurer who gave it to him in that form who would be responsible. So according to me, that I say shomer sachad, it's not immediately a loan. But according to you, Rav Huna, where you consider it a shoel, so therefore you're considering that transfer of money as a loan, and therefore the temple treasurer should already be liable the second he hands over the money and shouldn't say the word im hotzi. Rav Huna answers, "Amar lehu adin af al gab de lo hotzi. V'aydi de tana resha hosi, tana sefaname hosi." This is the truth. Is I agree that the temple treasurer is responsible the second he hands over the money to the money changer, even if the money changer didn't yet use it. And why does it say the word imosi in the resha, in the sefa? Only because it already has it in the resha. Lefichach imosi loma al gazbar hagizbar in the resha, saying even if the money changer uses it, the temple treasurer is not liable. So you need the word imotzi there. So just for the sake of parallelism, it says imotzi in the sefa as well. Next Mishnah. Hasholeach yad bepikadon. Bet Shammai omrim yilkeh bechaser ubiyater. Ubeit Hillel omrim kishat hosa'a. Rabbi Akiva omer kishat hatebi'a. If a shomer misappropriates the deposit that he's is supposed to watch, and in the meantime it goes up in value or down in value, and then he destroys it, consumes it. So there's two steps of stealing. Step one, when he first misappropriates it, and step two, when he totally destroys it. So what does he have to pay if it goes up or down in value? The first time of the first stealing, or the time of the second stealing, or a different time? So according to Beit Shammai, he's penalized the greater value for whatever it is. If it decreased in value, then it's the whatever he has to pay, whatever it was when he first misappropriated it. And if it increases in value, then Beit Shammai says he has to pay for the time when he destroys it totally, because it went up then. However, Beit Hillel says, no, it's the time of hotza'ah, removal. The Gemara is going to discuss what this means. Hotza'ah, does that mean misappropriation, stealing number one? Or does it mean the second time when it's totally destroyed? Rabbi Akiva, however, says at the time of the claim when it comes to Beit Din. All right, the Gemara. Amar Rabba, Haiman de Gazal Chabita de Chamra Mechavre Mekara Shavya Zuza Hashta Shavya Arba'a Tebara O Shatya Meshalem Arba'a Itebar Mimela Meshalem Zuza. Rabba's bringing a case of just a regular thief. This is now not a shomer, but rather someone who steals a barrel of wine. And when the time that he stole it, it was worth one zuz, and now the price went up to four zuz. At that point, he either broke it or drank it on purpose. So then he has to pay four zuz. However, if it broke on its own, it just cracked and broke, then he only has to pay one zuz, even though the market value at that point is four. Okay, we're going to spend a lot of time explaining Rabba. and also how it fits with Bet Hillel in the Mishnah. My Tama, first, what's his explanation? Kevan de ii tahadara le mara be'aina, heishata de ka shatile o de ka tabarala ka gazal mine. Utnan, kola gazlanin mishalamin kishata gezela. Now, you might have thought that at the time that he stole it, it was worth one, then no matter what happens afterwards, he should just pay one. Why does it matter what happened after? The fact that he smashed it, drank it, or broke by himself? So what's the reason that there would be a difference? Here's the reason. Because when he first stole it was worth one. And at that point, he could have returned the item as is. A thief can always return the original item as is, and then it wouldn't matter if it goes down or up in value. Here, I stole this, I returned the actual item. So he could have returned the item as is all the way up until right before he broke it. And at that point, even though it went up in value, it doesn't matter. He could have returned the item as is, which is only worth one. So therefore, at the time that he drinks it or smashes it, he is stealing a second time and he is making himself even more liable. He could have finished his problem by returning the item, but now that he broke it, he is now responsible. Now he can't return it anymore. Now he's going to be responsible for the time to pay the amount at that time, right? It is basically a second stealing. Yes, you can steal twice. You can steal once, but still you could return the item. So it's still available. So it's not totally stolen. It's not irrevocably stolen when he first steals the first time. And so he could just give it back. And that's worth only one. When he smashes it now, it's an irrevocable stealing. And so that's the second act, and then he has to pay at the time of the Gezelah. And we learn in a Mishnah, in Baba Kama, that one always pays at the time of the stealing. In this case, that's referring to the second stealing, so he has to pay four. Therefore, this explains the difference. If it broke by itself, he only pays one zuz. It was only one act of stealing, and he only pays at the time of the theft. And so at the time of that he stole it was worth one, and now he's holding on to it. He could return it. It broke by itself. It's not his problem. So he only has to pay one. My tama itva memelam shelim zuza. My tama hashtala abed la velamidi. Amai kamechai bet lea hi shata de gazla. Hi shata zuza hu de shavya. Why does it pay one? Because he didn't do anything to it at this point. It broke by itself. So what are you going to make him liable for? Only for the stealing number one. There was only one stealing. And at that time, it was worth one zuz. So that explains the difference. If it breaks on its own, there's only one act of stealing. He pays at the time that he stole it, which is only one. But if he smashes it, then there's two acts of stealing. One is he could return it. The second one makes it irrevocable. And so that second act of stealing, it's worth four. He has to pay four. Good. Now we're going to bring in our Mishnah. Tenan. Bet Hillel lomdim kishato sa'ah. My kishato sa'ah. So Bet Hillel says, unlike Bet Shammai says the highest of the two, whether it goes up or down. Bet Hillel says at the time of removal. We don't know what that means. So let's analyze that first. Ilema kishato sa'ah min ha'olam. Maybe it means at the time of the removal from the world, when it's destroyed. Stealing number two. Ubemai, ibechaser, mikal manda amar, hatanan kol gazlanin, misham kishata gezela. And what case? This is talking about where it was worth four and it went down to one. And it's telling us that he only pays one. How could that be? We have a Mishnah that thieves only pay at the time as at the time of when it was stolen, and that for sure means at least the amount that it was when it was originally stolen and was worth four. There's no way that Bet Hillel would say that he pays only one when, at the time of theft number one, it was worth four. So it can't be that. Vibi ated haynu Bet Shammai. And if it was worth one and now it's worth four, and Bet Shammai is saying, at the time of the hotza'ah, from removal from the world, you pay four. Well, that's the same as Bet Shammai, that no matter whether it goes down or up, you always pay four. So that can't be either. Ela pishita kishato sam bet ba'alim. Rather, when Bet Hillel says hotza'ah, what he means is, theft number one, when he first removes it from the owner's house. Now, lema rabba d'amar kebet shamai. But now we're going to have a problem because it looks like rabba is following bet shamai. Because rabba said, if it goes from one to four and he smashes it, then you have to pay four. Now, according to Bet Hillel, if it goes from one to four, then he says, kisha'at hotza'ah, you only have to pay the value of one. And so Rabba would not be like Bet Hillel, but rather but like Bet Shammai, that you take the higher value of either one. But can that be? Halacha should follow Bet Hillel. How could Rabba be following Bet Shammai? Amalach Rabba biyater kula amala pelige, piki pelige bechaser. Rabba says, okay, back to the drawing board. If it increases in value, in fact, everybody agrees that you're going to pay the increased value at the time of the second stealing. Rather, the machloket is only when it goes down. And I know we said before, well, how could it be? Would anybody disagree that when at the time that you stole it, it was worth four, and then goes down to one, then wouldn't everybody agree that you pay four, kish'ata gizela? And the answer is not so simple. Bet Shammai sabre shilchut yad anasiricha chisaron, pericha se b'shuta di dechaser. Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel disagreeing on a matter that we brought up on a previous daf, that the question of shilichut yad. If someone, shomer, misappropriates an item, according to Bet Shammai, even if it doesn't cause a loss to the item, that's already called stealing. And therefore, when it goes down in value over time, that's already in the hands of the thief. So since at the time that he first misappropriated it, even though he didn't cause it any damage, nevertheless, that is considered stealing it, being responsible for it, so he has to pay from that time, and it's worth four. Then the fact that it decreases, that he already owns it, and so the decrease is the thief's loss, and he has to pay four. However, Bet Hillel sabre shilchut yad siricha chisaron richaser b'reshuta demare chaser. Bet Hillel follows the opinion that in order to be called misappropriation, it actually also has to have caused damage or loss to the item. And therefore, when this shomer first takes the item with intention to use it, but he didn't actually use it yet, so he did not yet steal it. And therefore, that at that point it was four, it goes down to one, but it's still in the property of the original owner. And therefore, the original owner is the one that loses out. When he finally actually does drink it, the shomer drinks it, then it's already worth one. And only then does the responsibility for stealing it kick in. And so that explains the machloket between them. And this would also explain the opinion of Rabba, because we just said that if it increases in value, everyone agrees that you have to pay the higher amount. So good. Rabba said you have to pay, when it goes from one to four, then everybody agrees you have to pay the four. So that's good. And the machloket is only when it goes down in value. But that was not Rabba's case. So we reconcile Rabba. However, we're not at the finish line yet. Elahad amar Rava shilichut yad ena siricha chisaron lema Rava damar kebet Shammai. Hold on, Rava, who's Rabba's student, if in fact the names are, the identifications are as we say, sometimes there are differences in manuscripts, or even the same spelling could actually refer to Rava or Rava. Okay, but anyway, if it's Rava, but Rava said that when a shomer misappropriates, then he already acquires it, even if he has not caused it a loss. So that means you're saying Rava follows Bet Shammai, but we know he can't. Rava has to follow Bet Hillel, and so therefore that answer is not sufficient. Ela hachamai eskinan kegon shetiltela lavi aleha gozalot ubeshoer. Rather, a new way of explaining the machloket between Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai. That we're talking about a case where he took a barrel, not to use the oil in the barrel, but rather to stand on top of it so that he can reach some fledglings in a nest. And so he's borrowing, he's going to return it. He's borrowing, but without permission of the owner. What is the status of such a person? Bet Shammai sabre shoel shelo midat gazlanave, v'chi chaser b'shuta dide chaser. Bet Shammai says that someone who borrows an item without the knowledge of the owner is a thief. And therefore, from the moment he moves the barrel, even without doing anything to it, he already is a thief. And so he has to pay that amount. So if it's four at that point, he has to pay. And now that it goes down afterwards, and then he ends up breaking it after it goes down to one. So the loss is his own loss. The shomer's loss. So he has to pay four, and now it's worth one. But he already acquired it when he moved it, he has to pay four. ובית הלל סברי שואל שלא מדעת, שואל הווה, וכי חסר בשוטה דמרה חסר. בית הלל says, someone who steals something without permission is like a borrower. He's still a borrower. Even though he didn't have permission, his responsibility is that of a borrower. But the item of a borrower still belongs to the original owner. And therefore, when the decrease in value happens, while it is still owned by the original owner. Afterwards, when he smashes it, then the Shoel is responsible. The Shoel is responsible. But by that time, it's only worth one, and that's why he only has to pay one. But still, the Machloket is only when it goes from four to one. And Rabba was talking about when it goes from one to four. And so, this is still a good answer. But still not good enough. Ela amar ha ela had amar Rava shel shlemidat rabanan ganzan have lema Rava amar kibet shamai. We have a statement of Rava that a borrower who borrows without permission is in fact a thief. So, and that was the opinion of Bet Shammai. It is Rava following Bet Shammai? Can't be. Ela hacha b'shvach shel gezela kami palge. Bet Shammai sabre. Shvach gezela denigzal have o bet hilel sabre. Shvach gezela degazlan have. Rather, we're talking about an increase in value, not because of the market value changed, but rather because the item itself produced more, as we're about to see an example. And Bet Shammai says that when something produces, when the stolen item increases and produces more things, then it belongs to the original owner. Bet Hillel says that it belongs to the thief himself. So let's see. The machlok Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel will parallel the machlok between these two tanaim. The tanya hagozel tarachel gezaza ve'aldam mishalem otav et gizoteh bet veladoteha dibrei Rabbi Meir. If someone steals a lamb, and the lamb, let's say the lamb is not pregnant and does not have a lot of wool, and in the meantime, while the thief has it, it becomes pregnant or it grows a lot of wool, and he shears the wool or it gives birth. So now it increased in production while under the hands of the thief. So what does he have to give back? According to the Bimeir, he has to give back the lamb itself and the shearings and the offspring. In other words, it remains in the ownership of the original owner. That would be the same as the opinion of Bet Shammai, that is the nigzal, the original owner. Rabbi Yehuda omed gezela chozeret be'aneh. Rabbi Yehuda says the thief only has to pay the lamb. I stole the lamb, I give back the lamb. The fact that I got something out of it while I had it, well, that's mine. He gets to keep it. And that would be the same as Bet Hillel, who says that the benefit, the increased value, belongs to the thief. And in fact, this explanation fits better with the language of the Mishnah, because look, the Mishnah says that according to Bet Shammai, he's penalized according to the chaser, the decrease or increase. That means decrease or increase, like in the sheep, where it increases more productivity. It doesn't say zol and yakad, that the market value went down, the market value went up. And Bet Hillel says, no, at the time of Hotza'ah, when he first just takes it. And so you see the language of the Mishnah fits with this better, not an increase and decrease in value, and therefore actually the Mishnah has nothing to do with the case of Rabbah, and so the case of Rabbah is resolved, and through that resolution we have a much better understanding of the opinion of Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai in this Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva omer kishat ha-tebi'ah. Rabbi Akiva had a different opinion than above, and he says that the thief pays according to the value of the item at the time of the claim in court. Right, whatever it is then, whether it went up or down compared to the time of when it was stolen. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halacha K'Rabbi Akiva. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says Halacha follows Rabbi Akiva. It's the time that they go to court. Umodeh Rabbi Akiva Makom Sheyesh Adim. However, Rabbi Akiva agrees with the previous opinion, where I assume it means Bet Hillel. At the time, if there are witnesses that saw the theft, then it goes by the time of the theft, and not by the time of the court. My ta'ama, what's the source? Damar kedah lasher hu lo yitenenu biyom ashmato. V'chavan di ka'adim mehu sha'ata hu di chayav le'ashma. Because the pasuk says that you have to pay him according to the day of his guilt. Since there are witnesses that saw him actually steal it, so he's already guilty from that time. So he has to pay according to the day of the guilt. And we know exactly when that was because we have witnesses. So if there are witnesses, he has to pay that time of the theft. If there's no witnesses, then he has to pay according to the time when he is brought to court. Amar le'rav Oshaya le'rav Yehuda. Rabbi, ata omer ken? Hachi amar Rabbi Ase, amar Rabbi Yochanan. Haluk haya Rabbi Akiba, afilu makom sheyesh edim. Mai tama damar kerala, sher hu lo yitenan biyom ashmato, ubedina hu deka mechayeve le'ashma. Rav Oshaya tells Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is one that said this in the name of Shemuel. He says, Rabbi, right? Is that? Are you sure about that? Is that what you say? Because I heard differently from Rabbi Aseh in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. He taught that, according to Rabbi Akiva, he disagreed with the previous opinion, even if there are witnesses to the time of the theft. Nevertheless, you don't follow that the value then, but rather only the value at the time of the verdict in court. Why? From the same pasuk that he has to pay beyom ashmato on the day that he's guilty. When is he guilty? And it's the court that renders him guilty. Just because there are witnesses that saw something, he's not guilty yet until the witnesses are cross-examined and the judges say he is guilty, and therefore he only has to pay at the time of the verdict, not from when the witnesses saw him. Amar le Rabbi Zera le Rabbi Abba bar Papa ki az lat lehatam akifa sulma desor ve ul gabed Rabbi Yaakov bar Idi u be'ay mine ish mi al le Rabbi Yochanan alacha ke Rabbi Akiva u en alacha ke Rabbi Akiva. Now, although we just cited that Rabbi Aseh quotes in Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Akiva disagrees in both cases, we're still not sure, does halacha follow Rabbi Akiva according to Rabbi Yochanan or not? And therefore, Rabbi Zera asked Rabbi Abbas, is when you go to Israel, go a long way by the ladder of Tyre, and so that you can ask Rabbi Yaakov bar Idi and ask him, does halacha follow Rabbi Yochanan or does it not follow Rabbi Yochanan? If you're coming from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, there's a number of ways to go, like if you're going to go to Tiberias, which is the main center. So you could go straight down here through Damascus like that. Or you could take a longer way and go to the coast and then come down this way. So he's asking him, go to the ladder of Tyre. This is an area that over here that looks like this. It goes from up here to down here called the ladder of Tyre, I guess because of the steep slopes that were there that kind of look like ladders. So he says, go the long way, roundabout through Tyre, and then go ask over there, and then, you know, you'll come back, you'll come down to the Tiberia, where most of the rabbis were, and because in that spot, in the ladder of Tyre, that's where Rabbi Yaakov bar Idi lives, and he knows a lot of traditions, and ask him, does halacha follow Rabbi Akiva or not? So he did, and he came back. And in fact, he said, halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, always. Now, what do you mean always? My le'olam. The word always is to add and say, don't say halacha is like Rabbi Akiva only if there's no witnesses. But if there are witnesses, then no, we follow the other opinions and it's at the time of the theft. Not so. Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, 100%, and we follow the time of the verdict all the time, no matter what. And so you see that fits with the way that we quoted Rabbi Yochanan over here, that he disagreed in all cases, even if there are witnesses. Or another explanation of the le'olam, da'adara le'duchta v'itabera, la'puke med Rabbi Yishmael da'amar la'ba'inan da'at be'alim, kamash malan de'ba'inan da'at be'alim. Or it could be where the thief stole it, but then he returns it to its place where it was originally, and then it broke. He pays even though he already returned it. And that would exclude the opinion of Rabbi Ishmael, who said that you don't require the knowledge of the owner when you're returning it. If you steal something and then you return it, as long as you return it to the spot, same spot safely, that's it. You're not responsible for it anymore. So if you did that, then you would not be responsible. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees with Ishmael. He says, if you steal something, then you have to let the owner know, I stole it, I am returning it. And only then are you not responsible for it anymore. So that's what the Le'olam comes to add, that we follow Rabbi Akiva and the Le'olam. And even if you return it but without the owner's knowledge, you're still responsible. But Rava Amar Halacha Kebet Hillel. Rava, on the other hand, said, no, Halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva, rather the Halacha is like Bet Hillel, that one has to pay according to the time when it was stolen. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.